is the Supreme Person. He is not impersonal. Dhruva Maharaj could immediately understand this fact. He was aware that for a very long time he was practically sleeping, and he felt the impetus to glorify the Lord, according to the Vedic conclusion. A mundane person cannot offer any prayer of glory, of glory, the Supreme Personality, Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he has no realization of the Vedic conclusion. When Dhruva Maharaj therefore found this difference within himself, he could immediately understand that it was because of the causeless mercy of the Lord. He offered obeisances to the Lord with great respect and reverence, completely understanding that the Lord's favor was upon him. This spiritual enlivenment of Dhruva Maharaj's senses and mind was due to the action of the internal potency of the Lord. In this verse, therefore, the word svadhamna means by spiritual energy. Spiritual enlightenment is possible by the mercy of the spiritual energy of the Lord. The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is first addressed to the spiritual energy of the Lord. Hare. This spiritual energy acts when a living entity fully surrenders and accepts his position as an eternal servitor. When a person places himself at the disposal or order of the Supreme Lord, this is called Sevan Mukha. At that time, the spiritual energy gradually reveals the Lord to him. Without revelation by the spiritual energy, one is unable to offer prayers glorifying the Lord. Any amount of philosophical speculation or poetic expression by mundane persons is still considered to be the action and reaction of the material energy. When one is actually enlivened by the spiritual energy, all his senses become purified, and he engages only in the service of the Lord. At that time, his hands, legs, ears, tongue, mind, genitals, everything engaged in the service of the Lord. Such an enlightened devotee no longer has any material activities, nor has he any interest in being materially engaged. This process of purifying the senses and engaging them in the service of the Lord is known as bhakti, or devotional service. In the beginning, the senses are engaged by the direction of the spiritual master and shastra. And after realization, when the same senses are purified, the engagement continues. The difference is that in the beginning, the senses are engaged in a mechanical way, but after realization, they are engaged in spiritual understanding. Ecstatic purport in verse. Actually, there are a number of sections where great personalities have the darshan of the Lord, and the preliminary activity leading up to that Lord revealing himself, and then what they're experiencing in their spontaneous expressions are very wonderful sections and very important sections of the Bhagavatam to understand, because it's very enlivening to hear the description. And it gives one a clear understanding of the goal. And nothing short of that goal should be our aspiration. Needless to say, we're far from that goal. That's taken for granted. Whoever can make that claim that they're so right on the verge of that goal, that is not even the expression of humility that is characteristic of Vaishnava. As was the case of Dhruva Maharaj, who was such a person qualified. qualified to the point of winning the favor of the Lord. He was completely in a state of humility, as Prabhupada says specifically in the previous purpose. His feeling of humbleness was not allowing him to speak, although he was completely enlivened, bubbling over with ecstatic feeling. He was unable to express the spontaneous glorification that he wanted to because of his feelings of humbleness. It was at that moment that the Lord touched his forehead with his conch shell, thus empowering and enlightening him further. So many nice points are being made here. It is our within our disciplic succession that worship of Radha and Krishna takes place. There was actually even an historical point where Bhakti Radha, where Radha worship was also introduced in a formal way with the deity worship. And it's for the same reason that we are not, maybe some devotees have seen some posters of Krishna that are just showing Krishna floating in a cloud somewhere. We don't like these posters. I mean, the object is Krishna, but we're not... Krishna is never alone. This is our very clear understanding. What to speak of not alone? He's always surrounded. And it's natural, isn't it? Krishna would be always surrounded by his loving associates. The verse is there from the Brahma Samhita describing how he's surrounded by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. What to speak of goddesses of fortune? All varieties of living entities, of all descriptions, and all different relationships, intensely loving the Lord, are always surrounding him. And they're all being engaged in loving activity in relation to Krishna through the agency of his Radharani, his internal pleasure potency. So, wherever you find the Lord, you'll also find the Lord's energy. Isn't it? This is our philosophy. Energy is not without energetic, nor is energetic without the energy. You won't find the sun someplace floating in the space without sunshine. Nor will you find sunshine somewhere and there's no sun. You won't find that. You won't find Krishna somewhere where there are not his devotees. And you won't find his devotees somewhere where there is not Krishna. Therefore, when the Lord was present before Dhruva Maharaj, it was the spiritual energy of the Lord that was empowering and enlivening him. They're inseparable. The Lord and his energy are inseparable. But for our understanding, it's a little scientific, but there's a point to it. It's particularly the energy of the Lord that was enlivening his limbs, his body, his senses, his mind. Therefore, we always chant Hare Krishna, addressing Radha Krishna, or Lakshmi Narayan, or Sitaram, addressing the Lord first through his internal potency. And it's not just in the practicing stage. Prabhupada makes the point in the purport. In the beginning of devotional practice, there may be, technically it's called Vaidhi Bhakti, things may be a little mechanical. And what makes me, when I consider this part of the purport, it makes me think of the people who are our congregational members, or persons who are serious about becoming serious about Krishna consciousness in different ways, just beginning. Their practice may seem a bit mechanical. There are a number of people that I am immediately working with and helping in their spiritual life. And this is, although they may not say it exactly in this way, it's very clear this is the struggle that they seem to be going through. That they want spiritual life to be spontaneous and flowing in a natural way. But it is, if a higher understanding is there, and the higher understanding is one of relationship out of duty, or obligation to Krishna and obligation to spiritual master. Because the previous verse, which I thought I was going to speak on, describes how by the touch of the Lord's conch upon Dhruva Maharaj's head, and in this purport Prabhupada repeats the word at least a dozen times, immediately he became surcharged with all kinds of things. Immediately he could understand so many things at once. Immediately he could understand his position was to serve. And that position of serving and glorifying included also this, as Prabhupada describes, his very clear, the integral part of this spontaneous, immediate platform of pure devotional service was based on his understanding of the proper relationship between the super soul and the living entity. We find throughout Prabhupada's purports so many places, over and over and over and over, practically beating us on the head with this understanding. The difference separating impersonal and personal. The difference between the living entity and God, again and again. And that God, that Krishna is not impersonal. We are not impersonal and equal to God in all respects. And God is the Supreme Person, not to be misunderstood and mixed up and some confused or wishy-washy way, milquetoast philosophy, that the living entity is in some way equal to God. And the quality is the same, as much as the energy has the same quality, the energy of the sun has the same quality as the sun, or the drop of ocean water has the same quality as the ocean, but they're not the same. The living entity and the Supreme Lord are not the same. This dualism is there in the spiritual world. At the same time, unity, and the dualism and unity is very obviously expressed. That's our philosophy. And it's being expressed through the actions and the realization of Dhruva Maharaj directly. Wanting to serve. He has come to that spontaneous position from a prior condition, a prior quality that he manifested and cultivated and developed. And that was a desire to serve the instructions that he received from Narada Muni. That was what satisfied the Lord. It's very clearly indicated in the purport scene. That is why the Supreme Lord came and invited Dhruva Maharaj by coming present before him and enabling such a young boy to speak wonderful verses of glorification and praise, because he was satisfied by his service attitude. And his service attitude was specifically in relation to the instructions of Narada Muni. The object was Krishna. The object was the Supreme Lord. That was very clear. And even the motivation wasn't so great. The object was the Supreme Lord, and very obediently he followed the order of the spiritual master in terms of practical activity and service. And it's through this service attitude then, as Prabhupada, as the verse describes, Dhruva was then able to see very clearly the actual position of the Lord and the actual position of all living entities. And you'll find this also described in Bhagavad Gita. Not at all strange, but it's completely consistent. When Krishna is describing to Arjuna how one can come to the platform of transcendental knowledge, not something ordinary or something that can be derived by speculation or even something that by worldly-minded men might be considered to be very poetic. here in New York and all over the world. Famous literary men, whenever they give some public presentation here, all kinds of intellectuals in New York are very fond of following this writer and that famous person whenever they make some public address. Hundreds and hundreds of people, in throngs they turn out to hear this person's dribble of speculation. Just a little story to keep everybody awake. I remember the first time I saw Srila Prabhupada was at a university, at University of Buffalo. And 1977, he was invited to speak, and he was performing kirtan in a big auditorium with Allen Ginsberg. 68. Sorry. And there were crowds and throngs and crushes of people. But it was, people didn't have any special understanding of who Prabhupada was, just like when, I won't mention their names, but when other poets would come and read their recitations, crushes and throngs of people would also. So I had no idea about the movement and Prabhupada, and I just was going by in the hall and saw these crams and crushes of people, so I went inside to see what all was going on. And there was Prabhupada chanting, whispering. That sound vibration is altogether a different quality of sound vibration, needless to say. The other sound vibrations of Gary Snyder and this poet and that poet didn't change my heart and life like the sound vibration of Prabhupada chanting Hare Krishna. To change the whole direction of one's consciousness comes, that can only come from transcendental sound vibration. And with that sound vibration, as is described here with Dhruva Maharaj, the practical result of the effect of that sound vibration is kindling of service attitude. That is what is pleasing to the Lord. Because that sound vibration is present for everyone to hear. And it's pleasing for us to hear that sound vibration. For one to be situated transcendentally, the effect of that sound vibration is manifest in terms of the willingness to serve whatever, just like the directions that came from Narada Muni for Dhruva Maharaj, they weren't easy. One should not expect in coming before some enlightened personality or elevated spiritual personality, and you present some inquiry before that elevated spiritual personality, that what they're going to recommend for you to do is something that's easy. If it's something that's easy, then you would already be doing it. It's those things that we're not doing. It's those kinds of activities in rendering service, as Dhruva Maharaj was being asked to do, that are not easy. That because Dhruva Maharaj was prepared and in fact served according to those instructions, he gained the favor of the Supreme Lord. Another point that's being made in this verse is the activities of Dhruva Maharaj after his realization. It was completely, and Prabhupada underscores this in a number of ways by saying immediately he could completely understand that his previous activities were like those of a dead person. There's a verse like this in the Bhagavatam in the second canto. The movements of the materialistic person have no more significance than a dead body flapping in the wind, like a scarecrow that's tied to a pole. And the wind blows and the arm moves and the legs back and forth. Or they have this pages and pages and all kinds of energy is spent describing, for example, the story of Moby Dick, when they have beckons three times. It has no more meaning, according to the Bhagavatam, it has no more meaning than a dead body flapping in the wind, which is exactly what it was. It has no more meaning in the absolute sense. I remember sitting through boring English classes trying to understand the meaning of Ahab's beckoning three times and the white whale. So many, as Prabhupada is saying here, poetic descriptions that from the point of view of a spiritual personality, although mundane scholars may consider with great detailed examination how wonderful it is, this poetic expression, it has no meaning. And the activities, even for Dhruva Maharaj, what to speak of some literary work, even his prior activity, and he was a great personality, even previously, by worldly calculation, even to some degree by spiritual calculation, just see how powerful Dhruva Maharaj was, how great his determination was. He considered that his previous activities were nothing more than that of a sleeping person. And Prabhupada describes this, and I'll just reiterate very briefly. What we call sleeping, that period of our day, that's the shorter portion of our day when we're not running around doing things. So we call that portion of our mental activity as dreaming. Dreaming consciousness. But this is also dreaming consciousness. The other 16, 18 hours a day that we're walking around. In our dreams, we're also walking around doing things. And there's some mental impression that's being formed because we can remember those dreams sometimes. So there's some mental impression that's also formed during our waking. But that's also dreaming. There's daydreaming and there's nighttime dreaming, but they're both dreaming, according to the absolute self-realized soul. Similarly, not just the activities of the mind, the activities of the limbs and senses. There are senses for acquiring knowledge and there are senses for working. Just like we say that speech begins when one begins topics about Krishna. Not as the impersonalist says, that when you become self-realized, then all speaking stops. No, all speaking begins. Previous to that beginning, it's all like dreaming. And we can understand that in a philosophical way. But what to speak of having that direct realization? As we become, say, enlivened by some wonderful kirtan or some very enlivening devotional service, that enlivens consciousness. That's the internal potency working through the limbs, through the mind, through the senses. Everything becomes surcharged spiritually. That's our natural consciousness. That's awake consciousness, as opposed to any other form of daydreaming or nightdreaming consciousness. Then another point that's being made here, and it's just repeating what the previous verses are also saying, but because it's repeating, it's worth emphasizing. And that is, when one is in that state of spiritual realization, it is a spontaneous thing to want to speak words of glorification of Krishna. So one may do so in a preliminary stage, in some mechanical fashion, seemingly, like as people describe our religious practices, the Mangal Arati and Guru Puja, they call that religious ceremony, and they have other terminologies to describe the procedure of worship that we undergo in a daily way. We accept these things because they're given to us by the previous acharyas. We're given, they've been established in all of our temples all over the world by Srila Prabhupada, and we're continuing them on to today. But the meaning of them, the activity itself and the meaning doesn't change. Where's Dr. Mutz? Not here. I can guess where he is. Horizontal upstairs. Is he? That's all right. I just wanted to make some reference to to understand, he has a number of the new devotee that just shaved up here about tonight. Has a number of questions all the time about what different things in the morning program mean. He doesn't know the words. And of course we've all experienced that. First learning. And we can only appreciate the externals. Try to learn how to properly perform, paying obeisances and offering flowers to the spiritual master and the words for greeting the deities and what does it mean. But for the neophyte devotee, that eagerness to understand and explore and learn should not change as we become more advanced. The deeper meaning should also be, if we're in proper service mood, and from that through glorification, we want to, as Prabhupada says, enter into the spirit of the hymn on a regular daily basis. Coming before the spiritual master for Guru Puja each morning, that should be the consciousness of trying to understand the meaning of these words, how much we're dependent upon the mercy of the spiritual master. The qualities that, as the verses of the Guru Puja describe, how the spiritual master is an ocean of mercy, the friend of the poor and loaded master of the devotees, and so forth. And the glorification of Vishnupada is speaking on these points also. And there's standard glorifications from realized souls. There's great meaning and great enlightenment that can come from that. But this is a spontaneous position. The self-realized soul comes from. Therefore, those persons who are less than fully self-realized, there's certainly no harm. In fact, it's required to take up the position of following in their footsteps and practicing also. And from this practice, then the spontaneous stage comes. I'm making this point because recently I've heard this argument or doubt or complaint being expressed from different places, that I can only do this if it feels natural, if it just kind of comes spontaneously. We're not on that. The fact of the matter is, though, we're not on that spontaneous platform. If we were to act in a spontaneous fashion, we wouldn't really want to describe what those spontaneous activities would be. Not in public anymore. Not before the deity. Our spontaneity comes in devotional life as it came for Guru Maharaj, by practice. And so that the expression of glorification of Krishna, in fact, all the whole of Sankirtan activity brings out that expression, that spontaneity. It endears us to Krishna, and as one becomes, as we learn from the example of Guru Maharaj, as one becomes endeared to Krishna, the favor of the Supreme Lord is expressed in this way, to empower us to speak properly. So you were making this point also yesterday. Even one may not know very much to present to the conditioned soul the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Whatever you do know, you can express that. Even to do that requires empowerment. And that means that one who is expressing in that way, they're endearing themselves more and more to Krishna. And as a little seed grows into and sprouts and grows into a plant and grows into a whole bush or a tree, our devotional creeper also grows in that way by Vaidhi Bhakti, devotional activity performed in practice. And then as Prabhupada so wonderfully describes, Krishna will come before you. Like there's one famous lecture in Los Angeles where Prabhupada describes like this, that Krishna will one day, you go on your engaging in your devotional practices, chanting your 16 rounds every day, following very carefully the regular principles, engaging in devotional service with faith in Krishna, and one day Krishna will come before you. and say, I am like this. In anticipation of that day, it's not like the Christian idea that springing from the mental platform, one likes to think of oneself as saved or liberated and wait for that life hereafter, after the body poops out. But the enlightenment is cumulative, progressive. So when that day does come, when Krishna comes before you and says, I am like this, or one day the deity will speak to you, as Prabhupada also describes, it's not an all or nothing proposition. One becomes progressively realized, experienced as Dhruva Maharaj has experienced. So today is Ekadasi, Mahadvadasi actually, and that means the kitchen preparations are always late on Ekadasi and Mahadvadasi. So I hope you all have a lot of questions. Yeah? You're asking a loaded question. Yeah, it's most important. It's how, without Vaidhi Bhakti, without regulative devotional practices, this is the whole point. How can one come to spontaneous? It's absolutely required. Unless there's some authorized activity that one must perform that prevents one from participating. And even then, we don't like it. The desire to participate. Because if one doesn't have that desire to participate, one can become conditioned because of a particular service one has for some period of time. After that service terminates, I can think of a number of examples of persons in our movement. I won't be so specific. A person who had some specific service that required that they not participate in the morning program, and then after terminating that service, they continued to not participate in the morning program. Some protection was there while it was required, but over a period of time, that not participation became conditioned, and so did their desire become conditioned, so that when that service was terminated, so were they. So even if your service requires, like on Saturday nights, you stay up late with the Harinam program. And some nights, you continue, you go on, just chanting around, go to Mangala Arati, fall to pieces, and you're gone. But sometimes you're just too tired, and you take rest, and get up in the morning, and chant around. But those mornings, if that point ever comes that you don't want to, you're just looking forward to that morning when you can sleep through the morning program, then you know you're in trouble. If because of service you have to, just physically you can't, or the pujari assistants are in the pujari room. And so that somebody has to be doing certain things at certain times. Somebody has to go out and buy the boga, because otherwise it's a free-for-all and we can't get proper boga. So those devotees who perform that service, if they become conditioned in that way that they don't care to come before the deity and take darshan of Radha Govinda any particular time of the day or participate in the kirtan, then they have a problem. It certainly won't come to spontaneous platform of devotional service if they even endure. And you can say it the other way around. Those that you can look around at those that have been devotees for a long period of time, and they're the ones that are very particular about attending the morning program, isn't it? So shastrically and practically, we can see. Yeah? I thought that was great thing to do.
Well, sometimes
Right. We're interested in anything only insofar as it has relation to Krishna. Prabhupada describes us, what to speak of novels and mundane scholars and poets and literary persons. Prabhupada writes, we're only interested in the stories of Mahabharata because they're in relation to Krishna. Otherwise, we have no interest. It's the same point as this question. It touched the same point, the question of the morning program and the question you're asking. And if the essence is lost, as one, for preaching's sake, we can engage so many things, everything, practically everything, somehow, in Krishna service. If the essence gets lost, and as you just described, if someone becomes enamored and contaminated, then the reason they became enamored, the reason they became contaminated, is because the essence, the spirit of utility, utilizing something in relation to Krishna's service, became lost. So many things can be useful, as long as the spirit of service is there. And then one remains protected. But because one's intellect is materially contaminated and finds attraction for those things, one will fall back down in the material pool if that's the case. It's not for the purpose of service. Therefore, the whole idea of dovetailing one's propensities in Krishna service is a tricky thing, and therefore requires the guidance of spiritual authority. If one tries to do otherwise, even in principle, one's in trouble. This is one thing that you've analyzed a lot. This is one thing that you've analyzed a lot. I'm making a comment. Isn't it? Yeah. So your comment is? What is that humility that you're speaking about? I think we have to give a transcendental definition to that humility that you're speaking about. Well, what Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita is that, as you described, whether one starts with initial gusto and then poops out later, or starts out slow, bewildered, and then gradually gets their footing in Krishna consciousness, in either case, Prabhupada describes that material motivation is there in the beginning. And as that material motivation becomes satisfied, something has to happen. Otherwise, one will go away. And it's something that has to happen is one has to genuinely accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's what I'm giving as a transcendental definition of humility. Before God, we are very tiny. There's that story of Brahmananda and Prabhupada having a discussion about how it's difficult, Brahmananda asking how it's difficult to curb pride and to feel oneself humble. And Prabhupada gave that explanation of from Krishna on down to the whole, all the expansions of the Lord and the Vishnu expansions and the unlimited universes, and out of the unlimited universes there's, and on and on and down and down and down until here we are standing on this street corner, and you're saying it's difficult to feel yourself humble. And so if you can actually understand who Krishna is, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, immediately you're humble. Whatever the initial stages are like. Because the initial stages, again, guaranteed with some material motivation of some kind of combination. But yes, humility is required. And as you say, spiritual vision. But that spiritual vision is a vision that you'll find Prabhupada hammering home in his purports again and again. As in this. The Absolute Truth is a person. We are his servant. We are meant for rendering service. This is the knowledge that's being imparted, the transcendental knowledge that's described in Bhagavad Gita that the sincere person has to go to a self-realized soul to get by inquiry and service. Inquiry is to hear from the spiritual master, the same thing that Prabhupada is writing in his purports. God is very great, in a nutshell. God is very great, you are very tiny. Therefore, you are meant to serve him. And it's in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita also. It's throughout Bhagavad Gita. There's a specific verse where this is also described. The position of feeling oneself very tiny before the Lord. Therefore, you must serve him. That's humility. Humility is manifest in service. If one cannot serve, then one isn't humble. One cannot, with abandon, render any kind of service. This is brahmachari training. All kinds of menial service for the spiritual master. If one has difficulty doing that, and cannot come to that platform, then that person is not humble. That means that person doesn't understand who Krishna is. Nor is it possible for them to understand who their position is in relation to Krishna. So they won't get the taste to carry on. Well, that's like a tired horse. I mean, in the sense that it's all, what you're saying is completely true. Unfortunately, the force of material conditioning jades the living entity, conditions the living entity to the point where I sometimes feel this. I'm now expressing something very bluntly and very honestly. I sometimes feel that principle is just passé, like no one really, not no one, but it's, there's not sufficient regard in general for persons who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord and dedicated themselves to serving the deity and pushing forward the Sankirtan movement, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That natural, simply Vaishnava respect, it's hard to find it. And if it's hard to find it, then it's hard to find that, hard to find Krishna consciousness amidst everything else. And far more often, we'll hear questions and discussions about the importance of the morning program. But we don't so often hear discussion on this point that I think is a very important point. And sometimes this drives me up the wall to see the lack of it. In just viewing how devotees deal, just, you know, sitting in the prasadam hall or in kirtan or in the temple, just seeing how devotees deal with one another. It's definitely not in the forefront of devotees' mind. It should be very much trained. Certainly that's how I was trained. I believe that's also how you were trained. I'm sure it's how you were trained in Radha Damodar. Respect is there spontaneously. Largely it's due to the, this is my personal opinion, largely it's due to the lack of dealing in that manner from the older devotees, and therefore the newer devotees pick up that habit. They follow that bad example. And finally the buck stops at those who are supposed to be setting the example. But it's definitely lacking in those that are supposed to be following that example also. How can one advance nicely, happily and peacefully? One will simply become bewildered all over the place at every turn. So certainly very strongly I would advise anyone that wants to make nice progress in their Krishna consciousness that you must, and you will, if you are making nice progress in your Krishna consciousness, have a natural respect in your mind for those persons who are long-standing exemplary devotees in this movement. It must be there. Okay, hope breakfast is ready now.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.